This is the Primal King podcast, but first, a quick message.
Crosso Ranch has raised premium beef for 5 generations, but we've always kept it to ourselves, but not anymore. You now have the ability to get ranch-raised USDA certified beef from our mountains in Idaho delivered directly to your dinner table. Don't settle for growth hormones, steroids, or imported beef on the store shelves anymore. Go to crossomeats.com right now to place your order. Your body and your taste buds will thank you for it. Even our girls think it's really yummy.
Buy Crosso Meat. I love it.
Oh, Nanny!
What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King Podcast, and this is episode number 73. All right, so the one thing that I will ask you today in this episode, because this is a different type of guest than what I've ever had on, so I'd ask you to approach it with an open mind, regardless of what your thoughts are on COVID, on the shutdowns, the restrictions, everything else that's been going on. I wanted to bring her on because she has lived this. She's a business owner who was shut down, and just learning about her experience and what she had to go through was absolutely heartbreaking. It's fascinating. So again, approach this with an open mind. All right, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, welcome back, everybody. Super excited for my guest today. She's someone that has an insane story that I hope will wake everyone up to what's been going on over the past year. She is a mom, a wife, a small business owner that went from building her dream to basically losing everything that she had worked for due to the COVID-19 pandemic and the overreaching rules that came from it. Her story became national news when she decided to open up her business despite the orders to shut down. Because of this, she gained national attention, has been featured by several different news stations, Glenn Beck, Dana Lesh, Megyn Kelly, and many others. However, the blowback that she received was equally as crazy, facing everything from fines to jail time to even having child protective services called on her kids. She didn't take it sitting down, though, and has gone on to be an advocate for freedom and has now relocated to start rebuilding her life and has also started the nonprofit Glamour Institute for Freedom. Let me welcome the Patriot Barbie, aka Lindsey Graham. Thanks again, Lindsey, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes. So, like we were just kind of talking, I heard about your story, and again, you weren't far from us, but I hadn't heard about it. But kind of, I guess where I would like to start is, let's go pre-COVID, right? When things were normal, right? I mean, I don't buy this new normal, but what was life like? You had a couple different businesses, right?
Right. So yeah. Oh man. Just thinking about that is so depressing. Life was so, so good for everyone, especially in America. Our family personally, we had actually just built a custom home in Silverton, Oregon. It was supposed to be our forever home. Took 2 years. We designed it like from the ground up. We had been purchasing businesses with the Tanner Public franchise for a few years, and we had acquired 4 stores. I had just expanded my hair salon and moved to what I would consider like the prime location in Salem. It was in downtown. It was all window front. I spent, $100,000 renovating this thing and made it a brand new building. And we had just moved into it about a year and a half, 2 years before COVID. And I had expanded with the whole, build it and they will come mentality. And, I manifest everything in my life. And this thing had the ability to accommodate 25 artists, and we had it full. I had 25 artists. We were doing Botox and Juvederm and tanning and permanent makeup and 20 hairstylists. I have a hair extension company that I was running out of that location. And I had basically hired, the perfect front desk person, and everything was running smoothly. I was at the peak of my career, and I've just kind of come to the realization of this, that COVID hit when we were just at the prime of our lives. Like, all we could see was just downhill. But COVID lockdowns stopped. I mean, they ruined all of that. All of our businesses got shut down in March. We were the people that were going, dude, these PPP loans are not gonna cover even the leases. This is not, we're not gonna survive this. And, you know, sure enough, most of our businesses have not. We had actually just built a gym as well, right before the lockdowns. And so all of that got shut down. We ended up having to sell most of the businesses, and we're going to end up closing some of the other ones. So,
wow.
Yeah. So how long was it?
Yeah. How long, like, had this been going on? Like, did you kind of like start working at a salon or at one of these facilities and then kind of work your way up to it? Or what was that process like?
Well, this has been our lifelong journey. I've been a hairstylist for 15 years. I opened my salon, Glamour Salon, after 3 years. And so we were going on our 12th anniversary this year in May. It would have been 12 years open. So this has been, and I've moved to the salon multiple times, each time upgrading, each time creating more space and, you know, building a bigger and better salon. And at the time of the lockdowns, we were the biggest and most successful salon in Salem, Oregon. So this wasn't a business I had just built. This is kind of what I worked my whole entire life for. And I mean, that's gone now. So,
wow, that's crazy. Yeah. So you work your whole life, you get up there, and I'm sure, you know, because for anybody out there who's built a business, you know, you start getting the momentum and things kind of start seeming like they're going in the right way. And then you hear about this pandemic, probably like everybody did, but were you for the lockdown? Because even for myself, I remember seeing some of these videos of people like dying in China on the street, and who knows what type of stuff that they were putting out at that point, maybe to freak us out more or whatever. I don't know. But I remember, like, even myself, I was a little like, okay, something's going on here. The NBA shuts down and a couple of these things. Were you like initially at least for the lockdowns, or were you just like full go no matter what, or what was that like?
No. From the very beginning, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's conviction or, you know, spidey senses or whatever, but from the beginning, I was like, something is not right here. Something is not right. Yes, some people may die from this. And those people, which we very quickly learned who they were the older community or the highly susceptible. From the very beginning, I thought, okay, the government's role here is not to control a virus or control its people. The government's role is simply to advise us accordingly with the truth. And then we, the people, decide for ourselves. And so to me, it was an instant agenda in my mind, because I thought, they don't know anything about this, but they're locking the entire country down. I mean, if you'd already seen what we've seen in China, and what you saw was that half of China died, or, you know, 75% of China got sick with this virus, then it's like, okay, well, we know more about it. How is it that it came out and it's been out in other countries, but it came to us and they can openly say, we know nothing about it, but with that lack of knowledge, we're going to lock the entire country down and violate everybody's rights doing so. And so for me, it was like that drastic action was so suspicious. And the more that they learned, the worse it made the lockdown look, because it was so outrageous and dramatic. But from the very beginning, my mentality was, okay, I hear you. There's a virus out there. I hear you that it can hurt these people and it can kill these people. And those people should indeed make a decision to stay home, stay safe. But the rest of us, we have the free will given to us by God and by the Constitution to say, I'm okay. I don't think I'm going to get sick. And that would be a very bad decision if I did, but I still have the choice to do that myself. And I would have continued to live my life completely normal, perhaps with extra precautions. But like I said, the drastic action was so suspicious that from the very beginning, I called BS. And so my mentality from that moment was just, this is all BS.
So did you follow any of the orders when they first came out?
Yes, unfortunately I did. I mean, I was scared like everyone else. We shut down all six of our businesses on March 23rd. And as like I said, like, they learned more about the virus and it was still like, well, we better still stay home. But yet Walmart can be open and liquor stores and porn shops and weed stores. I'm like going, this doesn't make sense. And here I am, I'm going to not get unemployment for 9 months. And our businesses are going to go bankrupt because we still have to pay all of these bills and the rent and the equipment and the leases and the overhead. there's no way we're going to survive this. And so it was only about 6 weeks before she kept saying, well, we're not sure when we can open. Everyone stay safe and stay home. And, oh, we're still not sure. And the numbers still aren't dropping. And how are they not dropping if we're all staying home? I don't get it. So I just said, that's it. I'm opening my business.
So when you decided to open, were there, because even to this day, like I have people like within my family that still are staying home, are not doing anything. I mean, actually a fair amount of them. And for me, I've never really locked down. I mean, we live pretty remote. You know, we're fortunate, I guess, for that, but pretty rural. So not a lot has honestly changed for us. But even still, like I didn't want to ever just like stay home and stay safe, quote unquote, because I don't really think life is safe. Yeah. But at the same time, like, were there people that are like, Lindsay, don't do that. Like, you're going to kill people. Did you have like people close to you? Not the outside haters, the trolls, whatever, yeah, but like people close to you that were saying that.
I had a couple nurse friends who said, okay, we know you're, when you set your mind to something, you're going to do it. So do these things at least, please follow these guidelines. And so they kind of said, I wish you wouldn't, but I know you're going to anyway. And so please do these things. And I did not do those things because those things were insanely dramatic also. I mean, I'm reading these texts going, do you hear how crazy you sound? They were things like, when you get home from the salon, get out of the car, have sanitizer there, wipe down your whole car, everything that you've touched, get completely undressed, don't touch your kids, leave your clothes in a plastic bag in the garage, go inside the house, shower, wash everything, wash your hair, wash everything, don't touch your children, don't let them see you or touch you until you come out of the shower. I was like, you guys, what happened to... we don't know anything about this virus, but you're acting like I'm bringing the plague into my home by cutting a few people's hair. It was just so dramatic that I was thinking, I'm not going to do that. And I'm so glad I didn't, because as time has gone on, I'm almost a year deep into this, and I didn't do those crazy things and rearrange my whole life to indulge this crazy fantasy that the world is ending because of COVID-19. And I think of all the time and the precious moments that I would have wasted staying home and locking down and avoiding people and, you know, traumatizing my children. And I'm like, thank goodness I didn't do those things. We have now learned that that would have been more idiotic than all of the things that you're listing are completely sane.
Yeah. Well, and that was the thing for me is that, you know, I think anybody that has kids, you don't want them to have to grow up in constant states of fear. And that was the big thing for me and for my wife is that it was like, we'll send our kids to school if they open school, but they're not wearing a mask and they're not going to have all these crazy guidelines to where their life is absolutely miserable. Like I would rather homeschool them than put them through that. And right. I think that that's one of the things that gets me the most about everything that we've gone through is it's like, have we absolutely like paralyzed with fear an entire generation of kids now? You know, right. I mean, it's crazy, but anyways, yeah. So you get the lockdown, you lock down everything and then you decide to go back. What was it like? Because I know you caught like what you posted in maybe a group or something, yeah. And then everybody came for you essentially. I mean, what if you wouldn't yeah. mind telling us how that went?
Okay, so there's two ways that it went. One, it was the most amazing and profound and catalytic thing that I will ever do in my life. And two, it ruined me. So looking back, I have no regrets, and I'll just put that out there right now. So I posted in a group called Open Oregon, which I did not realize was public. And I said, listen, I'm done. I am opening my business. I have every right to. I can do it safely. And even if I can't do it safely, Walmart's open. They're not doing it safely. So why can't I? So I said, I'm going to open. Can you guys, you know, offer moral support, whatever? Well, it started getting shared. And at the end of the day, it had like 100 something shares. And the news got a hold of it. And so when the news started contacting me, I kind of was like, well, I don't want there to be any agenda out there that isn't true. So, I mean, I'm going to do these interviews so that they know why I'm opening. I'm opening because my family's going to go bankrupt if we don't. And I need people in America to hear that there are people that are struggling financially because of this only after 6 weeks. And this is unending as far as I'm concerned. 6 weeks was when I decided to open. There was no promise of an opening date at all. So what I got, was an outpouring of support from people in this group. an outpouring of support from patriots, I'm going to say Republicans, conservatives, just people who believed that our rights were being violated, and I was taking a brave step forward. And on the flip side, of course, liberals called me all kinds of vicious, vicious, vulgar, non-repeating names. They called me a murderer, selfish, you know, attention-seeking, fill in the blank with a bad word, that I was just taking advantage of the situation. I don't know, it was a publicity stunt. And it turned into a very, very public thing, but I learned that I can handle that. That, you know, maybe this is what I was meant to do, because I endured so much hate, so many vicious attacks. No one will ever understand what I personally went through to continue this journey, because you got social media out there, you've got Instagram, you got Facebook, you got your regular Facebook, your business Facebook, you've got your phone number, your email. I mean, they came at me at every single angle with that I'm a murderer, and, you know, so on and so forth. And of course the state came after me too. So I was not only being threatened by my own community, I was being actually threatened by all of these agencies with the state of Oregon, that if I didn't close my doors, I mean, they came at me before I even opened. If I opened my doors, you know, you're going to get a $70,000 citation. We're going to red flag your business. We're going to make it inoperable. And then after I opened, it was just one agency after another every single day. And that went on for a couple of weeks. So
what was, you talk about the people attacking you, was it just like social media comments? Was it, I mean, actually like phone calls, people coming to your house? Like, just because I don't think people understand how consuming it can be when, you know, kind of the quote unquote woke mob comes after you. But mm-hmm. I mean, from what I was looking at, it was kind of every direction at you, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is the best part that I look back on. Not a single person had the guts to walk into my salon and point at me and yell, "You're a murderer," or "You're a this," or "You're a that." Not one person, not one. But they have all kinds of guts when they're behind a keyboard. So they emailed me, they texted me, they called the salon, they left voicemails, they left comments on Facebook, they left messages on Facebook. They left comments on Instagram. They left messages on Instagram. And we're talking about six, you know, I had six businesses. Well, I only opened one. I opened the salon, but they were messaging every single one of our businesses to tell us what kind of people we were. And wow. Like I said, I also received thousands of supportive emails from all over America. And that is really what kept me going. The haters were a little hurtful in the beginning. I developed thick skin quickly. I didn't realize that this would be controversial. I thought my right to work should not be controversial. And I'm sure that the people writing me still have jobs or they're collecting unemployment. Good for them. But they came at me on social media, and that's, you can't avoid that unless you delete your pages or you remove your entire, you know, business entity from online. They were leaving one-star Google reviews on all of our businesses. I mean, it even got to the point where people were getting on my Glamour's website and making fake appointments and filling up our days with fake appointments so that we couldn't make money, so that we were getting no-showed all day by fake people. Wow. That is the cancel culture. Like, I have experienced it to the max.
Wow.
It is nasty.
So you mentioned something too. And I think in this current climate, everything is political, whether we want it to be or not. I know you said you got a lot of support from like conservatives or Republicans, you got a lot of hate from like liberals. Why do you think it is that this is actually this because it's like in so many places you can be like, if that person's wearing a mask, they're probably a liberal. If that person's not wearing a mask, it's almost 100% guaranteed they're a conservative. Mm-hmm. Where do you think this divide came from? And why is it so stinking political on stuff like you opening a business? Like, why can't there be liberals that support it? Or even for that matter, conservatives who don't? It doesn't seem like that's the point. Like, Have you noticed why that might be?
I have not. I mean, that's actually troubling me a lot, because to me, I was raised Republican. My values tend to be very conservative to the core. And when I opened, there was not an inkling in my mind that this would turn political. For me, it was like, there are people who are scared of this virus because they believe the media, and there are people who are not. And that's where the line is drawn, right? but it became so very clear to me that that was not the line. The line was conservative, liberal, Republican, and Democrat. And I don't know why at all. I really don't. I feel like the line has gotten thicker as we've noticed that it's okay for some certain groups to go out and protest and riot and not wear masks. And like, for example, our Democrat governor doesn't say anything about that, but she's over here preaching to everyone else how important it is to wear masks when she's been caught not wearing a mask. And so it's like, she's responsible for some of that political divide and defining it, because she says it's totally okay for these people to peacefully protest and I'm not forcing masks on them, but it's not okay for this church to be in session and not wear masks. And if they are, I'm going to cite them and fine them and shut them down. And so you go, okay, then you've kind of reiterated where that line is drawn. And honestly, I don't know if it would have been always conservative and liberal drawn in the middle if the media hadn't helped kind of push that agenda. And I believe wholeheartedly that we have so many of our American problems to blame on the mainstream media.
Well, isn't that wild?
They really.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't it wild that if someone were to tell you where they get their news from, you can almost know who they are. I mean, that's crazy to me in this day and age, right? It's like, Oh, you watch Fox News, you're a racist, you're a conservative, you're a blah, blah, blah. You watch MSNBC, oh, you're, you know, Black Lives Matter protest, blah, blah, blah. And it's just fascinating that it's like everybody's taking the same news and completely spinning it such a different way to where it's almost like your whole identity is wrapped up into your politics now, to where it's like, it used to be, we all loved America and we wanted each other to do well, right? Like, but it doesn't seem like that's the case.
Yeah. I was just watching on the news this morning how the Mavericks, NBA team, of course, doesn't want to play, hasn't been playing the national anthem before their games. And now the NBA is stepping in to say, we're going to reiterate this rule. And then there was a reporter saying, well, the flag stands for our ability to express our right not to stand for. And I'm like, oh my good Lord.
It's just crazy.
It should just be offensive no matter who you are. If you don't want to respect our nation, that's offensive. It's not allowed. But now there's this whole nother, like, well, on the side here, we've got these rights. It's like, wait, so no one can open their business and you're a murderer if you do, but then other people can choose not to stand for the flag. And that's, you know, completely okay. It's like, there's no moral, there's just no moral basis or ground for anything anymore. And I think that's where everything's gone wrong. We took God out of this nation and it all went literally to hell.
Yeah, no, I agree. So you go back to work, and what was it like? I mean, were your employees happy to be there? Were they freaked out? Did you have people that didn't want to go back to work for you?
So everyone was independent contractors. So I didn't have employees.
Okay.
And so they had the right to work or not. And basically I was saying, well, I'm going to work. I'm going to open the salon. And if you want to work, you can. But, you know, they still were being threatened personally from the state. Okay, well, if you don't stop doing hair, we're going to revoke your hair license and we're going to issue you this citation and you're going to get a Class C misdemeanor. They were getting those threats. So they were very worried. Out of 25 people that worked there, only 5 decided to work when I opened. And even then it was with the utmost fear that.
Well, were they scared more of the virus or the blowback because they're working?
No, they were scared of the blowback. They were scared of the state of Oregon doing something to them.
Yeah.
None of them were concerned about the virus. I think mainly because of the points that I made about, well, Walmart's open. And so we shouldn't be that scared.
Right. Well, and that was the thing that always got me, is that it's like we moved from everyone being scared of the virus to being scared to go against the orders from the virus. Mm-hmm. And that was the point to me to where it's like, okay, this isn't making sense. It's like people aren't not going out because they're scared of getting sick. They're not going out because they're being told that they can't. And if they do, they'll get a fine, they'll get a ticket, they'll get arrested. And that's where, to me, it went from like caution over a virus to actually overreaching government. And do you look back at that? Because one of the things, and I have a friend of mine who's a pretty big influencer, and he was just like, open your businesses, just open them, do it now. Like, if we all do it, no one can do it. They can't come and shut all of our businesses down, but most people won't. And that's just the truth of it. Most people won't. They would probably rather go broke than face the fines. And I'm not here to judge those people, thankfully for our business, it doesn't require us to be working in the public. So we never had to make that. And so I'm not trying to play tough guy here, but I would like to think that had I did have to make that, I would have stayed open and faced the consequences. But again, most people didn't. Did it ever bother you to be like, why am I the only one who's willing to open my business and do this while everyone else is sitting here going broke? Like, yeah, I'll take the heat. But if we just all work together, they couldn't shut us all down.
Right. That it bothers me. I mean, it bothers me to this day because a lot of Oregon is still shut. She still had up until last week, she re-shut down gyms, all gyms, and restaurants are takeout only, or outside dining. So now you've got tents, random, like cheesy tents all over Salem, Oregon, and, you know, all of Oregon, I would imagine. So people can eat outdoors and that's legal or whatever, according to her. So, I mean, Oregon is still locked down more than any other. Oregon and Washington are locked down still more than any other state in the entire United States. And we have the low, and they have the lowest cases. We had the lowest cases starting out before she locked everything down. And after I opened my salon, in my mind, I thought, well, I'm going to be brave and do this. And when they see that nothing will happen to me, because there are no legal terms in which I'm breaking any laws by opening my business, right? Then they're going to open theirs too. Well, they saw how much I was being threatened and maybe they were scared, but no one did it. I thought these salon owners are going to see that it doesn't take much. You open, you work, and I'm making a living, which is great. And none of them did after me. They waited until they were allowed to open. And I thought, well, gosh, I mean, I can do this. I can handle it. I can handle the cancel culture. I got thick skin now. It's kind of my fight. But I was disappointed that I was still and am still pretty much the only one who took that stand. And so I took all the weight on my own shoulders for the whole, you know, for the whole county, I would say, the whole state. Wow. Yeah. So it's, like you said, I don't want to criticize them because it took a lot out of me. And I actually think not everyone could handle what I went through. I think that very many people couldn't handle what I went through. It was pretty devastating and still is at times, but I just wish that they would have said, well, even if it sucks really bad, I'm going to have your back by opening as well so that you're not alone in this.
Right. But that just didn't happen. Would have been nice to see more people come, and even still in some of these states, it would be nice to see people come together. And, you know, it was funny because we had this meeting. It was like this men's group meeting thing that I went to, and I normally don't go to them, but everyone was kind of talking about what can we do? You know, we can write our senators, we can write our congressmen, we can go to the state house, we can do this. And there's a certain point to me to where I sit there and it's like, yeah, we can do all of that. And that's what we're supposed to do, right? We're supposed to, you know, petition our congressmen and stuff like that. But then I was like, you know, what I think the best thing to do is just to be free, right? Like just live your life. Because if I live my life and you live your life and you stop worrying about all of these restrictions and you open your businesses and you just live like a damn free American should, we don't have to go and write letters because they work for us. And like, sometimes I wonder, where did this all get mixed around to where it's like, we're asking for permission to do things.
Right. I don't understand that. And to go through those proper channels is going to take weeks and months. And now you're working for free just to petition, like beg for your rights. And that is pathetic. Right. Like, that's just something I never wanted to do. I was like, I'm not going to write any elected public official that I helped elect possibly and beg them to allow me to work. Right. Talk about making us feel inferior and like mongrels.
Yeah.
And I agree.
Take your $600 peasants and just leave us alone, you know? And that was the thing that drove me the most nuts about it, is how many people were like, okay, cool. Like, I got some money. Yeah. And it's like, no, that's not cool. Like, we should be working. So, So I want to get back to it though. So you go back to work. Did they show up immediately? Like, as far as the different agencies from Oregon, or did you operate before they started coming in trying to levy the fines, or what was the timeline like?
Okay. So here's the timeline. On May 2nd, I said I was going to open. The news got wind of it. They aired some articles about it, the 3rd and the 4th, and I was going to open on the 5th. So on the 4th, I go to the salon and I'm going to clean and get everything ready for opening. And on the 4th, before I opened, Oregon OSHA showed up and they said, we saw that you're going to open tomorrow. And I was like, uh-huh. And he said, well, I'm going to come back tomorrow. And if you're open, I'm going to give you $1,000 citation. And I'm like, well, what if I don't let you in? And he says, well, I'll get a warrant. I'm like, then you're going to get a warrant. So he says, fine, I'll get a warrant and I'm going to come in. I'm like, okay. He says, and I'm going to tell you to shut down. And if you don't shut down, I'm going to come back and I'm going to give you a $70,000 citation. I'm going to red flag your door. And that means that it's a hazardous workplace and you'll need to close until, I don't know, further notice, whatever. And I went, okay, $70,000 is a lot of money. I don't have it. So that got out, of course, in the news. And I don't even remember how, but I post these things on my Facebook and I update people. And so it went viral. And someone had already started a GoFundMe before I even opened. And then he reset the amount for $70,000. Like, okay, if she gets this fine, we're going to pay it. And watching that number grow overnight, I mean, it didn't hit 70,000, but watching it grow and getting the messages of people saying, please don't back down, please open, please do this for all of us. It was like, okay, I'm going to with like faith. And so I opened anyway. OSHA didn't show up the first day. They showed up the second day. I had people outside rallying. And I think that they were afraid that if they tried to come in, that there'd be violence. So they called me and said, we have a warrant. We're not going to come to your location because we're afraid there's going to be violence and we don't want the police there. And will you cooperate?
So real quick, what gave them the ability to get a warrant?
The fact that I was just open against the mandate. So they got a warrant that
not
they-
not a lawyer, but is that legal?
I don't know. I mean, they need a warrant to enter the premises. And yeah. So they got one. And now I think they couldn't get one. But I mean, I was the first business in Oregon, probably like only the third in America to open. And so they were pulling out all the stops to like, mm-hmm. to shut me up. And so they got their warrant. I said, I'll just cooperate with you instead of, you know, there being violence. I'm very much for the police and I didn't want violence. I didn't want to condone it. So the agreement was that I was going to cooperate via the telephone. So they started an investigation over the next few days. But by the third day, I had received a letter from Oregon Health Authority saying if I didn't shut down or stop services, I would be issued either a $5,000 a day citation, a $50,000 total citation, be arrested, or be issued a Class C misdemeanor. And I just blew that off too, because I knew that was a complete BS. And then the Oregon Health Licensing Office sent me a letter and sent all of the stylists that were working letters saying, if you continue to do services, we are going to revoke your license to do hair. Revoke it, meaning we can never get it back. And then they issued another letter like that to my salon saying, if you continue to operate, we'll revoke your facility license, which means that I could never own a salon again in Oregon. And then lastly, on that Friday, they knew I was at work and they sent Child Protective Services to my home and attempted to get into my home and interview my children. And on Monday that week, we communicated with them and said, this is ridiculous. Like, come see our home. I mean, come, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish here, but it was an intimidation tactic. And I found out after that, that most of what they were doing was illegal. The case should never have been pushed through. We never should have had a visit. It obviously was completely bogus and there's documents to prove that. And there's documents to prove that they recognized that it was completely bogus and they went through with it anyway. And they also interviewed one of my children and refused to let me in the room, which is completely illegal. And this is where the lawsuit comes in. All of these, you know, offices didn't have the authority to come after me and harass me. They did, they would have followed through with these things, right? I would have a Class C misdemeanor. I'd be in jail right now. I'd lose my license. Those were all bogus threats because they were just trying to threaten me enough to shut me down, but they knew they couldn't follow through. And so this is such a clear and concise act of, you know, harassment, bullying, and intimidation. And in the end, Oregon OSHA did issue me a $14,000 citation saying that I was willfully remaining open in a dangerous capacity.
Wow. So yeah. After all the threats and everything else, basically it came back to a $14,000 fine.
Yes, which I'm still fighting. So about a month ago, I had a meeting with Oregon OSHA via Zoom, of course, safety first. And they could not produce any evidence that I was an employer, because Oregon OSHA is, they facilitate safe workplaces for employers and employees. Well, like I said, I don't have any employees. So they really had no jurisdiction to investigate me in the first place. And we told them that. My attorney and I both told them that. And they investigated anyway. And so upon this meeting, we said, can you document for us what page the proof is in that I'm an employer? Like, so for example, I'm not even an attorney, but I would know that any W-2 at all would prove that I'm an employer. Any state taxes that shows that I pay employees would be a legal document. They couldn't produce any evidence during their investigation or any evidence with the state of Oregon or any evidence whatsoever in their own file proving that I'm an employer or that I acted as an employer during the times that I was open. And yet they refused to drop the citation. So I have to go to court for that as well, because I refuse to pay it. I will not pay it.
Wow. So, yeah. So did you just remain open? Just kept on plugging along?
Yep. Every day I made a very scared and conscious decision that I would call their bluff and I was going to remain open no matter what they threatened me with.
Did you ever have any like death threats or threats of violence against you, things of that nature?
Yes, absolutely. Probably more than I would even care to acknowledge, probably more than I've ever been notified of. But yes, I had, I was doxxed quite a bit. My salon was doxxed, and I had people saying that they were going to burn down my salon while I was in it quote, take that bee down. Let's take care of her. Things like that. So
wow.
I was pretty terrified for my family. And that's actually why we moved. So
did your husband ever at any point be like, honey, it's not worth it. Like, let's not do this.
Yeah. I mean, I think he would have liked for me to maybe have like taken it down a notch, but I also know that he knows me well enough to know that I wouldn't have done it. I would have said, I'm committed to this, and there's too many people counting on it. And I'm too far in. And every time I overcame one of the threats, I knew I could overcome the next one. And I just kept getting more and more confident that if you're on the side of good, you know, God is going to take care of you. And I knew I wasn't doing anything wrong just by trying to work. And I will never believe that I did anything wrong just trying to work. And so everything that we overcame as a family, and I overcame as a person, just made me that much more resilient in my fight.
So you had to move. What did you do with your businesses? Did you just have to shut them down then to move, or how did that play out?
So we had to sell the gym that we had just opened. We sold to one of our tanning salons. We still have two that are operating in Oregon that we would like to sell. And then my salon, the future is kind of unsure right now. So it's still open, but I'm not sure how much longer that's going to be.
Gotcha. So you moved just from fear of what was coming for you, or did you just want to get the hell out of Oregon? Or
it turns out that getting the hell out of Oregon was pretty awesome. But at the time it was very impulsive. Like I said, we just built a custom home and we just put everything up for sale and left. It was like we were fleeing. That's how it felt. And it was mostly because I felt like I can't be in a state where if I defy the governor, she comes and threatens my children. I cannot live like that. I can't live in fear like that. I can't live in fear that a liberal is going to blast my home address on Facebook and, you know, Antifa is going to show up at my door with my children home. I mean, we have guns, but we would need more bodies with those guns. And so it was ultimately fear for my kids that made me want to move from the culture, from the political divide, from the governor, from even the community that turned on me. We just felt very, very unwelcome. It wasn't home anymore.
Well, and over there, obviously, it's a pretty liberal area. What was the community like? I mean, was it split? Was it mostly against, mostly for? Like, how did you gauge kind of like just your immediate community?
My immediate community, I would say, seems pretty half and half. The problem with that is that the liberals are very, very loud. They have no problem cussing people out, attacking them on social media. They have no problem making their, you know, disgusting lies and rumors loud and proud everywhere. And then Patriots are more concerned with being, you know, quietly conservative because of that cancel culture. They've been silenced, and they've been silenced on social media. And so maybe it's half and half. And I feel like there was so many people in Salem that supported me. And I mean, I can remember those people by name for the most part because they're so supportive. But the problem again is that the cancel culture is so loud, it kind of, it drowns out the support. And so I felt like, you know, my community in general didn't have the respect for me that I used to command being a successful business owner. And I felt more threatened than I did welcomed.
That's crazy. Do you worry? Cause I heard part of, when you were on, I think it was with Megyn Kelly, that you ended up at the Trump rally in DC. Mm-hmm. And I know that at one point you said, maybe I was putting some stuff out on social media. Like I probably shouldn't have and everything else. The thing I wonder about is that when you go through everything that you have, you've been treated the way that you did. Do you worry that that actually can like radicalize someone, right? Like to the point to where they do crazy stuff. Cause it's like, man, I'm just trying to feed my family and I'm getting attacked everywhere. Like screw all of this stuff, you know? And that's one of the things I worry about is that people are like, enough is enough. Like, I don't know what I have to do, but sitting here being a good little American isn't handling it. Like, do you worry that stuff like, you know, whether it's the governor kind of coming after you in the state and this cancel culture, that it's actually driving people over the line to where they're going to do crazy stuff if things don't change?
I believe that with all my heart. I believe that every day I wake up and I try to calm my radical, because I'm becoming a radical, because my firsthand experience is like the government that I, you know, used to respect and used to understand is not my friend anymore. They're trying to control me. And I don't want to be controlled like that, especially not with false information and lies and mistruths and deceit. I mean, I've made comments like, I wish I could just pay taxes. I don't trust where my taxes are going anymore. I mean, my taxes in Oregon are going to the most ridiculous things. I won't even get started on that. And so I'm like, that makes me a radical. I don't even want to have a license to do hair. You're going to make me pay money to do hair, but you've reserved the right to take that away from me whenever you want. I don't need your permission to do hair and to charge money for it. I really don't. And so things like that make me feel like, oh man, I am getting real radical. Like I'm on the brink of anarchy and I'm probably not going to go to that extreme because I've caused enough trouble, but I think that way. And so I know that people who haven't even been in my position are starting to think that way too. We're living in times where the government that we were supposed to trust and that we just so willingly hand our money to and say, take care of us. They're not taking care of us. They're using it to control us. And that is pretty terrifying.
Well, and that's the thing that has worried me in the last year is that, you know, it's, I think it was like a meme or something that was going around and it's like, you know, you'll get to a point where you really piss off the people who just want to be left alone. And that's not going to be a good thing. And I worry that the further this thing drags out and the more that kind of your, you know, again, your silent majority, if you want to call them that, that you get more and more kind of pushed out because of these loud voices from the crazies. I mean, these people are crazy. They're loud. You know, a lot of these kind of far leftists, they're crazy, but they're loud. And so they drive this narrative that makes kind of, again, your normal people, if you will, feel like they're crazy. And I worry that it's pushing people too far over that way. So like, do you have any idea, like, how do we get back? How do we have dinner again with that liberal, right? Or that conservative, if you're on the other side, and actually be able to have some common ground?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one because there has to be something to talk about other than what's going on in the world. And right now it's like the focal point because everyone's going through it. You may have a different opinion as to how much you're going through it or why you're going through it. But we are, when they say we're all in this together, it's like, well, I mean, we are, but we all have different reactions to being forced to be in it together. I'm struggling with, you know, my liberal friends having conversations without getting into debates. I have very, very respectful and democratic friends who we can have civilized conversations. I think the media is going to have to take responsibility. And I don't know if that's ever going to happen. They have to take responsibility for taking one, you know, one piece of news and presenting it always, always with an agenda, always. And they are feeding the fire from the other side, which, you know, then makes us be on the defense. And so the media is going to have to take responsibility. I think for anything, I mean, I think for anything to change. And, you know, one of the things that I do is I just think about, as much as this battle is going to be ongoing, I just keep praying that Jesus comes back. And so it's like, let's not think long term. Let's pretend Jesus comes back next month. Let's just get through this month. And, you know, I went to a new church on Sunday, and he had this amazing, amazing sermon about how everything that is happening is supposed to be happening because God's allowing it and he's doing it for a reason, and God's in control, right? And we all know this. And so you need to know that he knows that this is going on and he's allowing it for the greater good. There's going to be a purpose and a plan. And that really gives me a lot of peace thinking, okay, he knows this is happening. He's letting it happen. And so he's got this, whether I've got it or not. I'm just going to let it play out and just try to give my kids the happiest household and the happiest life that they can have, and then just wait for those rewards in heaven.
No, I think that's great. What do you say, you know, without maybe trying to get into a huge debate, to someone who says, look, like, I understand your business was going downhill. I understand maybe you were facing bankruptcy and losing things, but that's all material stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Again, just to play devil's advocate, that's all mm-hmm. material stuff, but what you're doing could actually kill someone. What would you say to that person?
Well, that question has been posed to me many, many times. And I would say that that's just not a true statement, because the government allowed businesses to be open, allowed businesses to operate in masks, without masks, without rules or restrictions. And again, I'll say Walmart, a big box store, where on any given day, while the rest of America is locked down, stay home, stay safe, Walmart, 300 to 500 people can be in the store at any given time, touching whatever they want, and then retouching whatever they want, touching whomever they want, mask free, right? They are way more likely to kill somebody than me doing one person's hair. And if that person, the devil's advocate, cannot understand the difference, then it's like, I can't have a conversation with you. I can't even have a logical, intelligent conversation with you, because if you don't understand that COVID-19 is either a severe, deadly pandemic, or it's not, right? If it's a severe, deadly pandemic that could kill people, Walmart should not be open. I don't care how essential Walmart is. I don't care if you need bread. That's how deadly it is. Walmart cannot be open. It's killing people. Okay, so how come Walmart can, but I can't? How am I more likely to kill one chick who wants color on her hair than 500 people in a Walmart touching everything? And then you're picking up and buying the loaf of bread they decided not to get, and you're bringing their germs home, but that's not killing people. And so if the government had used that kind of common sense from the very beginning, if they had said, we're in full lockdown, and I mean full, you can't even get gas. Don't even go anywhere. You can't get gas. You can't buy food. You're going to have to like get on Facebook and try to barter food with someone because everything's closed. I mean, everything. That's how dangerous this is. Yeah. It'd be a very different conversation than, hey, Walmart could be open, but you can't do hair on 4 people today.
Well, and that was always my thing too, is if this is as bad as what some especially would lead you to believe, then shut everything down. Everything mm-hmm. from business mortgages to, you know, home mortgages to car payments to, you know, just literally freeze everything for 6 weeks. And yep. then it's like, fine. Okay, perfect. Like if you're not going to require me to pay bills, then maybe I'll hang out for a few weeks. But you know, if I still have all of my obligations, yet you are telling me I can't do the things that allow me to pay my obligations, this is just insane. So,
right.
Yeah. And I think that was the big thing for me as well. So I want to kind of start wrapping up here. Man, it's such a crazy story. I think you're awesome, first of all, for doing this. I wish more people would do it now if they haven't been doing it. The Primal King podcast is all around, you know, liberation, kind of the mindset of living free, of, you know, maybe just thinking a little different. The lifestyle side of it, you know, you coming from a business owner and, you know, I love the way that you look at lifestyle and trying to build and grow and everything else that I've seen. The last part of it is legacy. Now you've had the ability to go through all of this craziness, but now you've also maybe had a little bit of time to kind of sit back and, you know, see the storm maybe that you were really walking through for a while. I guess, you know, having gone through all of this, what do you want, you know, when people talk about Lindsay, like, what do you want your legacy to be?
No one's asked me that. Well, you know, my legacy is most important with my kids. And I teach them that we don't wear masks, that we're healthy, that we don't do things that we don't believe in. And that goes, you know, throughout all areas of life. I want them to know that I didn't do something brave. I didn't do something heroic. I didn't do something, you know, anarchist. I did what I felt in my heart was right, what I believe is right, and what God led me to believe is right. I stood up for our family. I stood up for the rights that we have as Americans. My legacy is that I did so proudly, that I did so without regret, and that I will continue to do so, because the more our rights get quashed, the more insistent I am on letting everyone know that that is not okay. I mean, we walk around maskless everywhere, and I will often be the only person in the store or the airport without a mask. And I just want my legacy to be that I wasn't afraid to stand up for myself, I guess.
That's awesome. No. And judging by everything I've seen, like, you're living it, right? You're living that. So I like it. Now, obviously you've got a few different things going on. For people who want to find you, they want to support you. Obviously, I know you've come up with a ton of different bills and attorney fees and stuff like that. Where can people go and support you, follow you, help you out in any way that they can?
So there's two websites. So the first one is glamourinstituteforfreedom.org. And that is the nonprofit that I set up and put all the GoFundMe money in when it was raised. And then the second website is patriotbarbie.com. And that's just kind of like my story. And I sell some cool Patriot Barbie apparel, and I'm going to do updates on my lawsuit there. And then, you know, you can shop there for stuff which supports the nonprofit, or you can just stay up to date on me. And then if I don't get deleted again, I had to start a new Instagram, the.patriot.barbie. My first one got deleted. So I've had to start all over, but I'm going to try to behave myself on this Instagram and get saved.
Awesome. So guys, make sure if you can help out Lindsay, I think most of you listening to this probably agree that we should be doing everything we can to support ourselves, to help each other out. Obviously, if you have the ability to help out Lindsay, I know that she would appreciate it. She's gone through a lot, fighting for, I believe, American ideals. And so make sure to get out there, check out her site, check out her GoFundMe, follow her on Instagram. Lindsay, thanks a lot for the time. I really had a ton of fun. Your story is just crazy. I still can't believe that you were just literally a few hours away from us, and I never heard about your story until recently, but thanks again for coming on and sharing it.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you everybody for listening to another episode of the Primal King podcast. There's one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time.